Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Work in the Arts with New Jersey's premier journalist, with Professor Fernando Uribe, and New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, the TBR superstar Patrick Rivera.
Coming to you from the Blog Talk Radio studios in the heart of Hudson County, folks. Yes, this is Work in the Marks here, and I am New Jersey's premier, now seven-time award-winning journalist, Fernando Uribe, and he is New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, the PBR superstar, the illustrious Patrick Rivera. What's going on, PBR? Okay. I don't know if we lost Pat. Pat, you still with us?
Yes, I'm still with you here. Hey, so how you doing? How's everybody here? I got something in my head here. It's an idea, all right? It's a little matchmaking for the future. In one corner, we have the professor, Fernando Uribe. In the other corner, we have the professor, Mike Tenay. And as a special guest referee, the professor, Serena Deeb. Bro, who's the real professor here? You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. I have to make a triple threat on that one, because I'll definitely defer to Serena Deeb. I mean, she can take me to class anyway. You know, that is a good one. That is a good one, folks. And we appreciate you tuning in from wherever and however you may be doing so here on blogtalkradio.com/workinthemarks. Of course, check us out on Spotify as well. And, of course, on all of our great social media. If you have a suggestion for a topic for a show, or you want to tell us how we're doing, always write to us. Our inbox is always open, workinthemarks@gmail.com. workinthemarks@gmail.com. I do try my best to monitor the inbox, but a shout-out to D. Rotten, our big administrator here on the show, who helps us really just get this show as fluid as possible every week. So shout out to D. Rotten. I won't mention his government name out there. But, again, he is such a great part of the success of this broadcast. So every single week, folks, write to us, workinthemarks@gmail.com. Don't forget to shoot us a message or follow us on Instagram @working_the_marks. And, of course, make sure you check out our own Instagrams, the PBR superstar, certainly @PaddyRican, PaddyRican, and certainly my own Instagram, as hopefully it's not getting as much shadow ban since I'm getting more views on my stories, @TheFernandoZone, and certainly on our Twitter, folks, @Working_Marks. Just make sure you check out the PBR superstar on his Twitter, @PatrickSKVM, and certainly my own Twitter, which thankfully with Elon Musk now won't be shadow banned, @TheFernandoZone as well. Folks, Work in the Marks is also on Facebook. Make sure you like us as well for all you Facebook subscribers when you're not being shadow banned there either. Folks, sharing is caring. Share our stuff when you can. Again, your favorite podcast here every week on Blog Talk Radio. PBR, how was your week, bro? What's going on?
Shadow ban.
Every fucking week on the show, I swear with you. My week was good.
You,
it was great.
Sure.
You're fucking beating a horse to death over here, right? And I'm a vegan. I don't like that kind of stuff.
Hey, listen, thank God for Elon Musk. Maybe he'll bring some balance to Twitter, right, since we haven't even gotten it.
What's Elon Musk going to do? He sounds like a fucking cologne. Elon Musk for Men by Calvin Klein.
Well, that Elon Musk is going to smell really good because it'll open up the frontier of Twitter and not restrict people and just kind of, you know, let people.
Yeah, so people can say the N-word on Twitter now, right? And that's okay. There you go. He's South African. He probably says it all the time, you know?
I'm just saying, you know, a little more freedom in big tech isn't a bad thing. So hopefully Elon Musk will accommodate us. But
good luck.
Had a lot to get. Absolutely. A lot to break through here. Certainly, it is Saturday, October the 8th, as we're recording today. Later on tonight, the premium live event coming from the Wells Fargo Center in the home of hardcore, Philadelphia. WWE will bring you Extreme Rules later tonight. We'll break that down in our main event segment today, folks. But first, let's get into the news here. One of the biggest news this week, Pat, as reported by multiple outlets, Jon Moxley aka government named Jonathan Good, being extended for 5 more years by Tony Khan. Certainly the numbers per se were not disclosed financially, but he will take on a more significant role, not just as a talent, but also as a coach and mentor. Apparently that is what is written into the new deal. Sources obviously all week were reporting that Moxley was working on a long-term deal for some time, and it is being reported 5 years. I think it's fair to say with Moxley's age, which I think he's maybe in his mid to late 30s, which is not old, but he's been in the business for a while.
Not at all.
I think it's one of those things where, you know, with this contract with AEW, and it's a component that's very important to Moxley, clearly, that he's able to keep working with companies like GCW and Revolver. Apparently, we all know that that would not happen if he goes back to WWE, even now under the auspices of head of creative, you know, Paul Levesque, but of course under co-CEO Stephanie Levesque and Nicholas Khan. It seems like maybe this was the best career move for Moxley, because it looks like he still wants to, you know, work in some of those independent promotions and, you know, defend the GCW World Championship that he is apparently he's fighting Nick Gage tonight in a title versus career match later tonight against Nick Gage. It seems like this is the best move for John Moxley, because going back to WWE, not to say he's not talented, but I think he gets lost in the shuffle over there. Well, in AEW, he kind of remains a big fish in a relatively small pond.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this is the best move for him. I was always under the belief that he would end up back in WWE at some point, but, you know, maybe the money wasn't right. I mean, there's a lot of variables to consider, what's best for his family. Obviously, he really enjoys doing the deathmatch stuff. You know, he's at the point in his career, I think, now where he's accomplished everything he's wanted to accomplish. You know what I mean? He was in the big time. You know, he did it there. Obviously, he wants to be the guy to help take AEW to the next level. Good luck with that, with that guy as your boss. But, you know, he's obviously going to be making a good amount of money there. He's going to have, you know, a less hectic schedule so he could spend time with his family. And it also gives him a chance to go cut his fucking forehead somewhere. So, you know, win-win for John. I'm a fan of John personally, you know. You know, as I've said probably on the show before, you know, when my house burnt down, American Championship Entertainment, ACE, that used to run out of Union City here, which was basically where AJ Lee got started. I mean, Jay Lethal used to wrestle there. Ton of people, ton of talented people. El Bandito, who's Eddie Arango, WWE official right now, you know, referee. And, you know, Mike had a show for my family and I after my house burnt down back in 2010. And Jonathan Good, John Moxley at the time, was in town for an Evolve show that was at that same building on Fifth Street. So he had stayed over and kind of spent the night in the gym there. And he stuck around, and he had heard what happened, and he had agreed to work the show. So I thought that was really, really cool of him. He didn't have to do it. This was a guy who had a lot of buzz. You know, he came from a great background, a great pedigree in terms of his training. And, you know, he really rubbed me the right way, so to speak. You know, so he came off like a really good guy, an honest guy, genuine guy. And ever since then, regardless of whether I'm a fan of what he's doing or not, I have a great respect for John Moxley, and I do have a soft spot for him. So happy to see that he's getting paid. You know, you got to maximize it while you can. And Tony Khan's willing to shell it out, so he's going to take it. And to your point, yeah, you know, he kind of would wallow in mediocrity if he would go back to the E, because I don't think he's not going to be bigger than Roman. You know, even if Roman leaves, you know, they got other people already in line. And, you know, what's he going to do, play second fiddle to Seth? And that's not saying that he's bad. He's very talented. But those two guys right now at this point are on a different level, I would say. And, you know, hey, kudos to Moxley for helping the little guy out. You know, and let's see if the company's even around in another fucking 5 years.
That's a great point. We don't know how AEW is going to be doing financially or even from a, popularity standpoint. I mean, I get it. I mean, yes, we'll talk about the reigns in a little bit. But again, they were just in Washington, D.C. this weekend. And I think my old high school memorial gym in Western New Jersey, I think, fills more people than that building they did in downtown D.C. So I don't know. I get it. They can't sell big buildings. I get it. I'm not going to, you know, listen, when they went to Philadelphia a couple weeks ago on the campus of Temple University, which, by the way, really nice school, really, really nice campus. It's actually in the nicer side of Philadelphia, which if there is such a thing, but, you know, it's not like Villanova or St. Joe's, but, you know, those are the type of buildings that they're going to be filling. So I think that that's what we're going to be relegated to when it comes to AEW. But again, more on that later, folks, as we sort of break down the ratings here and certainly in a little bit. But in other news this week, Pat, and I got to tell you, this is, you know, the honeymoon phase. I think for a lot of people, sometimes a Triple H might last a little bit longer. I don't know. I'm souring this week. Obviously, announcement to the commentary tables. I don't know who, for the love of Christ, thought that giving Kevin Patrick a lead role as a play-by-play was a good idea, but he's just so bad. And he will head up the Raw team along with Corey Graves, who I like at color. Switching over to the Blue brand, Michael Cole will be joined by Wade Barrett. I think that's, you know, again, until Pat McAfee returns, you know, until the end of college football season, which is until maybe early to mid-December, I think that's a good role for Wade Barrett to move up to SmackDown. But down in NXT, it's Vic Joseph now and Booker T. Jesus Christ. I mean, listen, I love everything Paul's doing, but this is souring for me. Kevin Patrick is, folks, he is god-awful. He's god-awful as a backstage guy. Now to put him on color every single week for 3 hours, my God. Oh, God, I can't even imagine. I mean, even the Monday Night Football games are bad. I mean, I'll deal with Joe Buck if I have to. Pat, I don't know about you. I soured this week on hearing this news.
Well, you're a very picky guy when it comes to commentary. I'm all about let's give people a chance. Kevin Patrick's a dude who's probably had a good attitude backstage. He has a great last name, in my opinion. And I think that he's, you know, a guy that they probably trust and they feel that, like, hey, this is your chance, you know. They got to start doing stuff, you know, with different people. I guess it didn't work out with Joe Fogan. I guess, you know, Jimmy Smith, as I like to call him, Joe Fogan.
Good.
You know,
He got good.
He grew into the role. I think he added a different element to it, but maybe he's off to do something else. You know, who knows? So maybe he's going to take some DMT and him and Joe Rogan are going to merge and become one. We don't know. you know, hey, man, kudos to everybody for getting a chance. Vic Joseph, Booker T, Vic Joseph is really good. Like, I'm a fan of the guy. He's really, really, really shown that he understands what the role is in a lot of ways. And even though I'm not particularly a fan of Michael Cole, I respect his body of work. I respect the fact that he's been there so long. But he's kind of like a little miniature Michael Cole, but, like, better. You know?
Yes.
And I also think Michael Cole's had, you know, the bad luck of having the stain of, like, you know, people knowing that Vince feeds them lines and he doesn't care how bad they are. He still, you know, hits them anyway. But, you know, I think him, Vic Joseph, Booker T, you know, Booker T's good. I like Booker T because Booker T, you know, he does exactly what a color guy needs to do. You know, he hits you with, like, you know, catchphrases and a couple little bits of wisdom. And he's a Hall of Famer, and he's a five-time world champion. So, you know, I think he's going to add something to that. SmackDown, you know, I like it. I think Barrett is another guy. You know, he's really, really gotten good.
Yeah.
You know, I just think that because it's weird because sometimes, you know, it's like the English thing's a hit or miss, you know? Like Lord Alfred Hayes was cool, you know, but – yeah, then after that, you know, it didn't really work with the English thing. But now, you know, Barrett's really grown into it, and I think he's just done a great job. Hey, man, I'm all for it. Let's see where this goes. You know, Kevin Patrick's got a lot to prove. I'm sure he's going to get a lot of unnecessary hatred. But, you know, the WWE feels that he's in a position to get this done.
No, I get you. I mean, listen, I'm glad that we're getting away from the three-man booths. I'm just glad to see Byron Saxton off the air. Byron Saxton's atrocious. He has been god-awful going back to the SmackDown days with Corey Graves and I forgot what his name was.
He's not as bad as you think. He's not as bad as you think. And I think that the fact that people talk about him so much, like, that's a good thing. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter what people are saying.
True.
As long as people are talking about you, that's a good thing. You know what I'm saying? You ought to know that.
Listen, there's no such thing as bad publicity. Believe me, I know that firsthand. I get it. But I just think, dude, like from again, I've never been a fan of the three-person booth. It's rarely worked. It's a lot of clutter. I don't know, man. And I get it that maybe Jimmy Smith, I remember, folks, everyone's not aware, Jimmy Smith was predominantly an MMA announcer. So his transition to pro wrestling was, I think a lot of people don't realize how hard that is. And remember, too, again, whether or not the rumors are true or how legitimate it was that Vince was always feeding lines to people in their ears, right? So maybe that would create, one more layer of micromanaging, et cetera. I mean, Jimmy Smith did a really, really good job. I think he grew into that role. He did it really well. Again, Pat, it's not about being overly picky about analysis. It's just that Kevin Patrick as a backstage interviewer was bad. I'm just having difficulty processing the reality of
him transitioning. How was he bad? How? What did he do that made him so bad?
It was just very, again, nothing against the British because I don't mind the British per se. But, I mean, it's one of those things where it was very just, I think, flat. You know, Wade and Kevin Patrick are both British. Their execution is very different with language and linguistics. And I just think that it just seemed very pretty boyish. And that's the way
Kevin,
it came off.
Kevin's not British. He's not British. He's Irish.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, he's Irish.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. Yeah. It's just, I think the pretty boy type of demeanor, and I get it. If you're watching and if you dislike it, hey, that's the reason, right? You know, sometimes we watch because we dislike something, no question. I just don't know about him. Again, listen, I'm sure Corey Graves is going to have to really, earn that money for the next few weeks, if not months, to help him along, because I'm sure Kevin Patrick's going to have some hiccups. Listen, like anybody. Let's remember when Jimmy Smith first started. It wasn't smooth for Jimmy Smith at first, but he grew into that role really well.
But Jimmy Smith never did it, though.
No, Jimmy Smith never did that.
That's the thing.
No, I'm saying. Exactly. You know? He grew into that role. He was already an MMA play-by-play, but again, it's different with pro wrestling, no question. I'm just not a fan.
Exactly.
Listen, to your point about Booker T, I like Booker T, five-time WCW World Heavyweight Champion, former WWE World Heavyweight Champion, a great town Hall of Famer. I get it. I think he'll bring some comedic aspects to the role with Vic Joseph. I don't know, man. Just not big on this. Just not. I mean, again, we'll wait and see. But maybe the first thing I'm going to bitch about when it comes to Paul Levesque here and the production of this. But we'll see. Again, it's 3 hours. Let's see how Kevin Patrick and Corey Graves will do, and the rest of the announcing team this week. Also, Patrick,
one more thing there, Fern.
Sure.
I think Kevin Patrick is going to have an advantage over Jimmy Smith because Kevin Patrick's already been in a wrestling company, and Kevin Patrick already comes from a wrestling background. So he understands what the commentator has to do in order to get certain things over. Whereas in MMA, you're just literally calling what you're seeing. You don't have to get anything over. You don't have to, try and make somebody look strong. Like, they're making themselves look strong. You're just basically, narrating. But with pro wrestling, you got to put over certain angles. You got to talk about certain things. You got to shout out the main event. You got to do a bunch of other stuff, marketing, stuff like that, reading ads. So, I think Kevin Patrick at least is going to have a leg up in that regard because he's already going to be familiar with this. And I think he did commentary for, either 205 Live or, one of them Jay Brown shows that they put out there, mm-hmm. one of the smaller ones. And
he's
done well enough there. But let's give the kid a chance. That's all I'm saying.
No, that's fair. No, fair assessment there. Of course, staying on the commentary topic this week, Jimmy Smith did come out publicly and said that he never really got an explanation for the firing this week. So according to Sean Newman on Wrestling Inc. and also on Turnbuckle.com as well, I believe here. Former announcer Jimmy Smith said he didn't blink an eye after not receiving an explanation for his firing this week. On the most recent episode of the, quote, Unlocking the Cage podcast, the former MMA fighter turned pro wrestling announcer said that his release wasn't a surprise because WWE Chief Content Officer Paul Levesque accidentally told him prior to Monday night's show that there was about to be a shakeup at the commentary table. Quote, I knew basically the whole Monday night, that I wasn't coming back. So when I got the call Tuesday, I was not particularly surprised. Smith said longtime WWE announcer Michael Cole was the one who officially called him with the news, and then Cole explained, quote, it's really tough in the pro wrestling business. And he said, and I go, Cole, I know, I don't have a regular job. I understand how it works. I don't expect an explanation. I don't expect a long background, long story. I find those conversations really, really weird, strange, and unnecessary. Smith went on to say he doesn't know what it's like to be fired from a regular job, and that he doesn't understand why an employer would give an employee an explanation for why they've been fired. Quote, the idea that you're owed some kind of explanation or something is a weird concept to me. They don't tell you anything. They're not supposed to tell you anything. It doesn't matter. And the explanations don't mean anything anyways. Subsequently, obviously, WWE announced its commentary changes this past Thursday. I think a healthy attitude by Jimmy Smith, you know. So I think everybody looks at terminations and dismissals differently. I think that's a good, healthy attitude to put on, you know, PR-wise. It doesn't necessarily close the door for anything in the future, right? If he comes off as sour and bitter or bombastic, you know, that might, you know, make people in the office sour in Stamford, Connecticut. But I think he leaves the door open by kind of having a graceful exit and not really kind of taking to social media or kind of airing his grievances in a podcast, Pat.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, it's pretty professional for him. The guy's a pro, I'm sure. You know, like I said, he's probably going to go take some DMT, try and merge with Joe Rogan. They're going to kill an elk with their own teeth, you know, and then they'll probably drink the blood and go roll around for like 2 hours, smoke a joint and wear a little rascal's hat and call it a day. Hey, man, you know, he's been there before. He understands what it's like. And I'm sure that there's a reason. I mean, who knows? Maybe some tweets will come out or something or some scandal. Or maybe he was just an asshole. Who knows? You know, I can understand there being some type of condescension to some extent by, like, MMA guys, like true MMA guys in pro wrestling, because they're like, well, this bullshit's fake. But it's like, yeah, the fake bullshit makes more money in one fucking event than you guys do, you know? And not only that, but all these guys are getting paid way more, you know? And it's a harder business. They get beat up a lot more over a longer period of time. But who knows? I mean, it could be a lot of things. Maybe he was just an asshole. Who knows, right? Like, we can't tell by watching that on TV.
Absolutely.
Let's see what happens with him. I'm sure he'll end up commentating somewhere else, you know, like MMA and shit.
Absolutely. Again, we don't know the backstage politics. We don't know the backstage demeanor, how he interacts with talent, how he interacts with the office. So, again, I think it was a graceful exit. Certainly leaves the door open in the future. We'll see. I think he did a great job in the time that he transitioned into being a good play-by-play announcer. Again, I'm glad that WWE is getting rid of the three-man booths. I think I didn't like that. Apparently being reported that Byron Saxton will be in the back doing backstage segments, hopefully maybe just getting people coffee. And the less we see of Byron Saxton on TV, the better, I think. But it'll be interesting how these six guys move forward.
Love Byron Saxton.
What's that? Of course you'd like Byron Saxton. But
love,
I mean,
Byron.
You know,
I would love to send Byron Saxton and Aaron Hicks to one of your fucking parties. Love to do it. If I could figure out a way somehow to send those two guys to your party, I would love it. I would love it.
Well, you know.
I'd
start
to
go
fund me to send them there.
Well, the Yankees are going to have an early winter, I think. So who knows? Maybe Aaron Hicks will have some time on his hands. So that's for sure. In other news this week, also on Wrestling Inc., a great reporter, by the way, great journalist I read up on a lot. His name is Fernando Quiles Jr. I tell you, that's a hell of a name there as far as I'm concerned, at QJ, reporting that Vice TV will premiere its new documentary. It is now official. The Nine Lives of Vince McMahon will air on October the 18th at 8 p.m., Tuesday night. A lot of their premieres on Vice TV are on Tuesdays. And, you know, for anybody at home that doesn't watch Vice TV, folks, I mean, it is a great, great channel. Aside from Vice News, which I tend to watch when it's on, it leaves a little too much left for me, but I like it. It's a different perspective for me. But all of their Dark Side stories, series, whether it's Dark Side of the Ring, now the Dark Side of Comedy, very insightful, folks. If you didn't think there was a dark side to the comedic world and that profession, I mean, it's an eye-awakening series, the Dark Side of Comedy. Dark Side of the 90s is a great series. But now on October 18th, The Nine Lives of Vince McMahon. Now, apparently, according to the Wrestling Observer newsletter and Uncle Dave, is among many of the people interviewed for this two-hour documentary. And it's reported that the film is on Vice TV's schedule, and it will be part of Vice's new series, quote, Tales from the Territories, a documentary on the once-dominant independent regional wrestling leagues. Dwayne Johnson, known as The Rock, is an executive producer on Tales from the Territories, which I'm looking forward to, Pat. I think that's going to be a good series as well. But the details on the nine lives of Vince McMahon will cover the sordid circumstances surrounding hush money payments to several former WWE female employees, a scandal which resulted in McMahon relinquishing his executive leadership position in WWE. McMahon has been previously the subject of several documentaries, including an episode of Dark Side of the Ring, which focused on the steroid trials, one of the episodes, as a matter of fact, the last season on it, which was the federal government's failed 1994 prosecution of Vince McMahon for allegedly supplying the WWE talent with anabolic steroids. No surprise there. You know, the ineptitude by the Justice Department and the FBI clearly goes back to the 90s, but this is a very big part of the thing. In July, Netflix did pull a four-part docuseries on Vince McMahon's life from its schedule, even though the endeavor was already in post-production. I don't know, Pat, man. It seems like people, you know, I think this is a sizzle being better than the steak. A lot of stuff we already know. I don't know what Vice TV is going to pack into 2 hours that we don't know already, unless it's just hearsay by people like Dave Meltzer being interviewed and others who don't like Vince McMahon. I just get a sense it might be a lot, you know, to quote the immortal Bard, much ado about nothing.
You know, not for nothing, Fern. You talk a lot of smack on the FBI, but the next time you go to one of them their gimmick autograph signings, I dare you to go up to little Guido and say something to his face, okay? Because you won't, because you're afraid of the full-blooded Italians, and everybody knows it. My question is, who's going to get canceled? Because, you know, whenever these things come out, it's like, ah, here comes the old shovel again. Somebody's going to get buried. And somebody's either going to get canceled or they're going to attempt to cancel someone. So this should be interesting. I mean, look, it's no secret that the Marks have been trying to cancel Vince forever, okay? It's been going on for quite some time. And I don't think that this is going to do anything to the fans that, you know, have kind of just realized, hey, Vince is a really rich guy. Wrestling is a really slimy business. He's a human being. And, you know, he did what he did, you know. Now, other stuff that's happened, you know, we'll see over time what the deal is. It's been covered, like I said, you know, a lot of it's probably been covered in the books. You know, there's been different documentaries. There's been different things that have come out over time that have detailed a lot of the stories, a lot of the stuff that's gone on. I'm sure they're probably going to talk about Pat Patterson. I'm sure they're going to try and bury Pat Patterson. I'm sure they're going to try and bury a lot of people in the company, a lot of office. But, you know, here we go again, you know, it's like that Grand Theft Auto meme, here we go again, because it's going to be really interesting to see who this newer generation of fans are going to get pissed off about, you know, because obviously us older fans were already like, oh yeah, that thing, yeah, whatever, you know, like, because it's been around for so long at this point. So, but I'm curious to see what Vice does. I think it's going to be half burial, half praise, actually mostly burial and a little bit of praise. And I don't think that they're just going to solely go after Vince. Like I said, I think they're going to go after Pat Patterson. And I expect a few other office people that they're going to, you know, try and extinguish. But another one of these things, man, and I'm honestly not a fan. I'm just not a fan of these things because I feel like they get more heat than anything else. And I feel like it gives Marks, like, shitty talking points, like stupid talking points where they think they fucking know what they're saying about this. But let's see. I'm going to tune in and see it because I'm curious to see what this hatchet job's going to look like. How about you?
No, I'm with you. I think Vice TV does a great job with a lot of these series, man. I mean, again, going back to Dark Side of the Ring, very first episode, the Montreal Screwjob, to everything else, to the steroid trials, to the life and death of Chris Benoit, to the life and death of Owen Hart, to talking about Bruiser Brody. I mean, I think it's been a really well-done series. I mean, I don't like the amendments to it with getting Conrad Thompson involved and, you know, Dark Side of the Ring Confidential. The less I see of Conrad, the better. I don't know. There's just something that's really unlikable about Conrad Thompson, but that's me, you know. But the series is very, very well done. Everything Vice, it just seems like everything Vice touches turns to gold when it comes to the traffic on these shows. Dark Side of the 90s, great, great series. If you haven't watched it, Pat, watch. I mean, there's so many great episodes, whether it's talking about the new, the Real World on MTV, the rise of, you know, tabloid TV with Jerry Springer, Rush Limbaugh, talking about black comedies rising. It's a great, well-done series. And even Dark Side of the Comedy, if you've watched, you know, the life and death of Chris Farley, one of my favorite comedians, tragic what's happened to him, Andrew Dice Clay. You know, I think, you know, Tales from the Territory is going to be interesting. I mean, for people that are still alive, whether it be Jim Cornette and others that lived during that period, I think that's going to be interesting to see how those territories survived in the 80s. I mean, maybe, not so much the 90s. I mean, Vince already had bought out most of the territory. So, but I think it'll be interesting to see how that plays itself out in real time. And then I think this thing about Vince, I think you're right. I think it's a burial. I think it's going to be people that have an axe to grind with Vince, people that are never going to be working with WWE ever. You know, let them, you know, that's their 15 minutes. Get on TV, do their burial events, what Vince didn't do right by them, what Vince stiffed them on money. I mean, I'm sure we're going to hear all this stuff. I mean, you know, calling it the nine lives of Vince McMahon, I think that's just predicated on the fact that regardless of how much trouble Vince has gotten himself into, he's always found a way to get himself out. And I think that's what it's predicated on, whether it's the steroid trial from the 90s, whether it's, you know, at the time in the mid-90s, Bischoff and Ted Turner trying to literally put the WWF out of business, and other things, you know, the PR disaster about Chris Benoit. It seems like, hey, you know, Vince has just been able to dodge bullets. It's almost like Neo in The Matrix. I think he has that kind of ability. if I had to guess, I think what it's predicated on, that what's it going to take to cancel Vince? What's it going to take to get rid of Vince from the public eye? You know, maybe people might say, hey, listen, these allegations by these women, maybe that was the cherry on top. Maybe that's what it took to get Vince out of here. And some people are rejoicing, right? And some people are, well, okay, well, it happens. What? You know, a billionaire, you know, going after pussy, what, for the first time in the history of pussy? Like, wow, shocking, folks.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I just think that people that are going to criticize him, you know, they're going to judge him. They're going to come up with this whole plot in their head. You know, all the Mark conspiracy theories, you know. But at the end of the day, they're still all going to spend their hard-earned money to go to WrestleMania, to go to Royal Rumble, to go to whatever event is going on near them locally. They're going to go cheer. They're going to spend money on gimmicks. They're going to buy retro gimmicks. They're going to buy new shirts of old wrestlers on WWE Shop. And they're going to continue to pour money into Vince's pocket.
Pat, they'll be there Monday at Barclays on Columbus Day, when most of the kids have off and people have off from work. They're going to be there on Monday.
Celebrating
the DX.
Exactly. Yep.
Exactly. So to your point. Other wrestling news, though, Pat. You know, last night in Albany was Impact Wrestling's, I guess it's their WrestleMania, Bound for Glory. That's their big show of the year out in Albany, New York. Good card. I'm not going to go through all of it, but just, you know, Brian Myers retained the Digital Media World Championship against Dirty Dango. For anyone that's not aware, that's now Fandango in Impact Wrestling. Nice to see him, you know, show up on a pay-per-view since we haven't seen him in many, many months. Obviously, Raven inducted into the Impact Wrestling Hall of Fame, inducted by Tommy Dreamer back on television. Your point about canceling and this and that. Well, seems like Tommy Dreamer's paid his penance and he's served his time in online jail and PR jail, and he was the MC there.
It's just that nobody watches Impact. That's the problem. Okay.
Fair enough.
It's
fair
just
enough.
That nobody watches it. All right. I'm sorry. I got to keep it real there.
Well, again, seeing Tommy Dreamer back on television was interesting. Obviously, inducting his longtime rival into the Impact Hall of Fame. You know, Raven, I don't know. I mean, he seems to be in good health, but looks still to be in pretty bad shape. If that's a paradox that I can explain, I'll try. Certainly, Frankie Kazarian, the longtime veteran in professional wrestling, reclaiming the X Division Championship last night. But the big news last night, though, Pac, really out of Bound for Glory, was every year during Bound for Glory, they have what's called the Call Your Shot Battle Royal. It's pretty much Impact Wrestling's equivalent of Money in the Bank. And certainly, you know, it's a battle royal. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I was multitasking last night watching the playoff game there, as well as SmackDown and AEW Dynamite, excuse me, Rampage and the Battle of the Belts show. But apparently it's, you know, a battle royal. I think guys come out in intervals and the last two guys left in the ring go at it in their own singles match. And a surprise, the last entrant last night, former Impact World Champion, Bubba Ray Dudley, Bully Ray, made a surprise appearance last night in Albany during Bound for Glory, and he won the Call Your Shot Battle Royal. So sometime down the line, after winning the Call Your Show Gauntlet, Bully Ray will get a shot at the Impact World Heavyweight Championship.
Wow. That was really captivating. Raven, to me, is one of the most underrated talkers and one of the most underrated minds in the business. He's just always been a great speaker. Even as Scotty Flamingo, you watch those promos back. Yeah, the character was corny, whatever. It's the fucking early 90s. What do you want? And, you know, it was crappy, the overall presentation, but the way the guy spoke every time he talked. Even as Johnny Polo, when he would, you know, cut promos for that, he was just a really good speaker. And then obviously when he became the Raven character in ECW, that was it. You know, he took it to another level. I had a chance to hang out with Raven one time at a Jersey All-Pro show backstage. And he was a really, really cool guy. And his understanding of how to work and what to do and not doing a lot but getting a big pop, It's incredible. Like, he really understands how to work. You know, Raven went out there. He told me before the match, he said, "I'm going to take three bumps in this whole match." And I was like, "Really?" He's like, "Yep." He's like, "I'm going to take a bump at the beginning. I'm going to take a bump when he comes back. And then I'm going to take a bump for the finish." And sure enough, he went out there and he did just that. But he had the crowd going fucking crazy. And maybe to some people, they might say, "Well, you know, taking three bumps, you know, that's, you know, the crowd's not going to be into that," but he took three bumps and the crowd was into it. And it was amazing. And there was one spot where he hit a move on the outside and he went to, like, you know, hit his Raven pose. And a couple of kids in the front row had silly string that they bought from one of the vendors that was in the place. And they sprayed the silly string in Raven's face. And it was fantastic. It was really, really good stuff. But Raven to me is a guy that I don't think it's enough respect. And if there's any aspiring wrestlers that are listening to the show right now, check out Raven, check out his work. The guy's just has an amazing mind for the business, and I got a lot of respect for him. So good for him,
absolutely,
for getting inducted. I call him.
Absolutely. Other results as well. Jordynne Grace retained the Knockouts Women's Championship in a basically a street fight against Masha Slamovich. Not bad attendance though, Pat, for an Impact show at the Armory in downtown Albany, New York. I think it was maybe a few thousand people. Maybe I think it was somewhere between 2,000 to 3,000. It's not bad for an Impact show, considering it really plays to smaller venues. But as we know, Albany's a Mark town, so Mark wrestling fans are going to like going to shows like this. It's easy. It's more affordable. Yeah, it's more affordable. Obviously, it's not going to be as expensive, for example, as, let's say, the Barclays Center this Monday, right, for Raw and the DX 25th celebration. Mm-hmm. But, you know, nice turnout for them. And listen, 20 years now and counting, seems like Impact knows their role, as they say, you know, play small venues, generate some merch, generate some advertising dollars on Access TV, and they're chugging along, you know, with what I would argue is better booked pro wrestling for a secondary promotion. So, I mean, I think that's a healthy way to look at it.
Absolutely, Fern. I think that Impact, one of their greatest strengths is just their awareness and their adaptability, man. The way that they've been able to kind of just say, okay, hey, this is where we're at right now. Okay, what do we need to do? We need to do this. And then they go and they do it. and they continue to thrive and they continue to stick around. And, you know, and I don't mean thrive like, you know, in the sense of WWE, but they still exist. They're still a good place of employment. They have good wrestling people there. They have people who understand the business. And I think they give an opportunity for people that maybe might not get the shine in WWE to be able to be something there, which is kind of funny because, you know, you hear a lot of AEW fans and they kind of feel that AEW is supposed to be that place for, you know, the undervalued WWE talent, the former undervalued the WWE talent. And Impact seems to be more of that than AEW is, or AEW has been thus far. But, you know, I talk a lot of shit on Impact. I think everybody does. Impact's kind of the brunt of the jokes. Not so much lately with AEW, but Impact's just a much better produced show. You can see that the agents put things together very well. It looks professional. And, you know, even when they do the goofy stuff, they still do the goofy stuff well enough to get the attention, to get the notoriety, good or bad, and execute it in a way where it doesn't look like the total shit.
And their vignettes are better. Their vignettes, their backstage segments, their video packages to give us a little bit of an illustrative history of a feud are infinitely better than anything AEW does. To use your quote, I'll take the Pepsi Challenge on that.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Absolutely. I agree with that. But again, you know, it's that awareness. It's that understanding of like, hey, we're a wrestling company. And hey, if somebody's just changing the channel one day, casual TV viewer, and they end up on this channel, we don't need to tell them that they have to go to YouTube. They got to go to Wikipedia. They got to get the Impact app. You know, they don't got to do none of that shit. You know what I'm saying? They put everything together and tell you the story in one little video package. And you get everything you need to know right then and there. You know, and that's more appetizing for a casual viewer than, well, I got to go here and I got to watch Being the Elite episode fucking 46. And then after that, I got to go read this Wikipedia page. And then I got to find this one BDC match, you know, from 8 years ago. And it's just like, what? Nobody wants to do that. Nobody wants to do that, especially not for people that they're not familiar with, people that aren't stars. Okay? If you're a star, that's a different story. People look into your past, but you're a fucking star at that point. People are interested in you already. You're not making people interested in these nobodies, you know, in America. And I don't mean that in a disparaging way. I don't, you know, because these guys are all professionals in their own right. But to a mainstream audience, you're fucking nobody. Nobody knows who you are. So this is where Impact, again, gets it right. Impact's more of a wrestling company in that sense. And just a lot of other little details, you know? And you know what? Fair play to Impact. It's good that they keep thriving. You know, they'll keep doing what they're doing. Wrestling fans will go wherever. And I just think it's just a much better program than AEW right now.
It certainly is. And nice to see Bully Ray come out during the Battle Royal, win the Battle Royal, win the Call Your Shot Gauntlet. At some point, he'll challenge, the Lethal Weapon. The Walking Weapon, excuse me, Josh Alexander, the reigning and defending Impact World Heavyweight Champion. Nice to see Bully Ray, maybe, you know, one more run around the sun, as they say.
Yeah. I mean, let's see what he's got left in him. If I were him and I was going after Josh Alexander, obviously he's a fantastic technical wrestler that's been established, Canadian, and those guys could be pretty tough, man. But if you're going to try and, you know, get some kind of an advantage on him, you might want to sneak up in catering while he's a sitting weapon, because you're not going to get him if he's a walking weapon or a standing weapon or a running weapon, you know. But a seated weapon, he might have an opportunity there. So, Bully Ray, if you're listening, take my advice.
Absolutely. It's almost like the Juggernaut. Like, don't let him get any acceleration, you know what I'm saying? If you remember from the X-Men Last Stand movie.
Exactly.
Don't let the Juggernaut generate any momentum. Yep. But folks, again, good stuff there at Impact. Let's see what Bully Ray does. Obviously, his radio partner, David LaGreca, the better of the LaGreca brothers, as far as I'm concerned, and a devoted member of Cowboys Nation, signed an extension with SiriusXM Radio. Busted Open Radio will continue on in its present format with a nice extension from SiriusXM. So nice to see that with David LaGreca. Obviously, that's also benefiting Mark Henry and Bully Ray as well. With the show that I try to listen to whenever I can. There's a lot to do during the day. I forget sometimes to turn on Busted Open Radio on SiriusXM. But for anyone at home who doesn't listen to David LaGreca, and Bully Ray and Tommy Dreamer and Mark Henry. Folks, take it a listen. It's a good show as well. Pat,
yeah, Fern, I'm sorry to cut you off there, but did you know that LaGreca's getting in the business? Like, he's doing stuff regularly now with ISPW, Independent Superstars of Professional Wrestling, run by Tommy Fierro?
Yes.
Yeah.
I know that him and his – I saw that. I've been seeing that lately. Also, it was nice to see him and his brother Don in the ring. I personally would have liked to see David, you know, crack his skull open with a chair because I loathe Don LaGreca. But it's good to see them getting involved, and mostly David too, like to your point about Tommy Fierro. Tommy Fierro is a guy that is really, really trying to put out really great content out there. And folks, if you haven't watched some of the stuff online or YouTube it or go on Instagram, it's some good stuff, man. Good point, Pat.
Yeah, I agree. And also, you know, hey, man, you know, cool it with the violence talk here, all right? Because I'm going to ban you for community standards in the program if you keep talking that way. And Tommy Fierro, he's a really smart guy. I've known Tommy, you know, I wouldn't say we were buddies, but we've seen each other for many, many years over time. And, you know, it's always cool whenever I see Tommy. And he's been around since the early 2000s. So obviously he's a smart dude. You know, he learned from Dennis Carluzzo. He was friends with a lot of people from NWA New Jersey, you know, Danny Commando, that whole Jersey Click crew. And, you know, he's a smart guy, man. And he's got a good head for the business. So all the best to Tommy Fierro and ISPW.
No doubt. Yeah. And I, as a matter of fact, I remember meeting him a couple months ago at a meet and greet at Morristown at the Morris County sports complex. So good stuff to point out there. And shout out again to Tommy Fierro for all the good work that, you know, it's about persistence, about keeping at it. And he is still as relevant as ever in what he's trying to do in along the independent wrestling scene, for sure. Pat, some interesting stuff before we get to our main event topic this week. Looking at the numbers here, as we always like to break down the ratings. This past Monday, October the 3rd, Raw was competing against a really good rivalry game on Monday Night Football, the Rams and 49ers. Raw did a 1.6, down about 67,000 from the week before, 1.67. That was up from the previous week, September 19th, on 1.59. September 12th was 1.71. September 5th on Labor Day, right after the Castle Show, 2.094. Great Raw. Good way to sort of, again, sort of the go-home show right before Extreme Rules in Philadelphia this weekend. Solid Raw. Interesting to see Omos backstage. Great stuff with Riddle and Rollins. That whole storyline, that whole build-up for their match this weekend, the Fight Pit match. Seeing DC on the Titantron was interesting. Daniel Cormier, UFC Hall of Famer. Again, just a good number. We talked about this before. You know, yes, during the end of the summer, once, you know, the Paul Levesque era began with him as the chief content officer, we were seeing, you know, 2.1, 2.2, even 2.3 Raws. I get it. It's Monday Night Football. The NFL, as we know, is probably the most popular sport in North America. But this is something WWF/WWE has been dealing with for almost 30 years now. So, yeah, it may not be 2-something anymore right now during football season. I get that. But it's still a very, very healthy number that's near the 2 million mark. So no surprise there this week on the Raw rating, Pat.
Yeah, absolutely. What was the rating? The rating for this past Monday was what again?
1.6 even.
And what was the rating for the previous week?
I'll give you the last 4 weeks here. October 3rd was 1.6. September 26th was 1.67. September 19th was 1.59. September 12th was 1.71. And on Labor Day, 2.094.
Gotcha. Okay. Which one was the Cowboys one? Did the Cowboys have a Monday night game?
Yeah, it was the September 26th game. That was a 1.67. That did better than this past week's. The best one thus far was in the last, let's just go 6 weeks here. Really towards,
so
like,
more
the
people watch the Niner game? Is that what you're saying? More people watch the Niner game?
I don't know. I can't tell you. I didn't look at the Monday night rating. They were both division games.
Because if the ratings, you know, like the ratings lower, you know, or something like that, you know, I'm just, you know, just try. Anyway, whatever. I'm just trying to figure it out here. Just doing a little math in my own head.
Okay.
You know, I got a pad out over here. I'm writing things down. But look, I'm not surprised. NFL's back. You know what I'm saying? NFL is king in North America, especially in the States. And it's tough, but they still can tread water and do better. Shit, they can fucking swim, you know? AEW, they can't do that, man. They're not facing that type of competition. I mean, they're losing to what? Fucking hockey? Like, not even good hockey games, just hockey. It's a regular fucking hockey game. Look, no offense to hockey.
Well,
I like hockey,
yeah,
but come on, man.
Games, yeah.
Imagine AEW had to go head-to-head against the NFL. It'd be a wrap.
Well, they're gonna go. Well, I mean, arguably, the NBA is probably the second most popular sport in North America, probably. And the NBA returns next week, so AEW is gonna have to shuffle their show around. Where Dynamite may not be on a Wednesday. It might have to be on a Tuesday. It might have to be on a Friday. I don't know, or a Thursday at like 4 p.m. Who knows? Especially with the baseball playoffs, especially on TBS.
I don't know if you heard this or not, right? But there's a little article floating around about how Discovery and Time Warner, you know, they want to get rid of AEW internationally. So they don't want to offer AEW internationally. They only want to keep it limited to, like, the States.
Oof.
So I don't know if that's, you know, 100% accurate, but that's what they're thinking about doing. I'll tell you right now, man, even with that stuff, like, years from now with WWE and all that, you know, when basically, you know, they would have to pick WWE or AEW, it's going to come down to that at some point. You know, AEW is just that they're just still not doing themselves any favors. And I don't think that they're going to get that kind of money that they got the first go around. And I think that they're really going to have to prove a lot more. I mean, I know I foolishly said on this episode that they still had some time to get their shit together, you know, and to be able to challenge in the ratings, but They just still haven't been able to get it together, man. And I think it's just only going to get worse. And I think that Tony Khan, I think, is really starting to feel it. And I just don't think that they're going to be able to continue to generate something steady that's going to go over 1 million. I just don't, man. And I think it's going to get worse for them. I really do.
I don't disagree. I don't disagree. Speak of AEW Dynamite ratings, let's move on to them this week. Interesting, you know, the third year anniversary show. Interesting number here. Let me just pull it up. According to the anniversary show here, just give me 1 second, folks. Here, as I'm just trying to have this load. Apparently, the number this week was over. Third anniversary show was 1.038, up about 48,000 people from the previous week. So let me just run some last 7 weeks here on AEW Dynamite. So October the 5th,
okay,
Wednesday, 1.038. September 28th, 0.990. The Grand Slam show, 1.039. September 14th, 1.175. September 7th, really a few days after All Out in Chicago, and obviously after all the hoopla and the controversy, everything we learned about CM Punk in the backstage fights with Omega and the Bucks and everything went on, that Dynamite did a 1.035 with MJF returning. The previous week, the Go Home show right before All Out was 1.020 on August 31st, and on August the 24th, 1.049. So they've been a little slightly over 1 million. Nothing really crazy. The only big show, really, 1.175, that was the week before Grand Slam. And that was really the sort of, you know, that tournament they were having for the brackets to have the finals at Grand Slam. So 1.175 has been there. I'm just looking at the numbers here for 2022. 1.175 was their best number thus far this year. They had 1.023. They had a 1.129 in February, Pat. and that was early this year. But their 1.175 show, the 14th, that's been their best show this year.
Interesting. I mean, look, like I said, I'm not convinced, man. I'm just not. I'm not convinced. I think that they're not going to be able to sustain this kind of stuff. And I think eventually it's just going to get worse and worse for them. It doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter if you put the belt on MJF or not. You could do anything. It's just not going to work because the leadership, the foundation, the structure, the things that mattered, it's not there. It's not there. If you have a shitty foundation, odds are your house ain't going to fucking last, right? Well, they got the shittiest foundation out there, and I just don't believe it. I don't believe that it's going to be able to sustain, and I think they're going to downsize, man, or they're going to call it quits, and he's just probably going to keep the library. I don't know. He's a fucking weirdo, too, so who knows what he'll do, you know?
No, I'm with you. Speaking of ratings real quick, just to answer your question, talk about the Monday night games and what their influence is on the Raw rating. According to SportsMediaWatch.com, to your point, the Rams Niner game this past week drew a rating of 6.75 with 12.5 million viewers. The Cowboy game was a 10.8 rating here against the Giants, and 19.34 million people watched that game as opposed to 12.5 million this past Monday. Just a little for everyone's edification on the show this week, folks.
Of course, because it's the Giants. Duh. There's a lot of Giants.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah. Clearly. AEW numbers, man, again, to your point, again, only time this year they've cracked over 1.175. They had a couple 1.2s in 2021. Not so much here this year. All of 2021, they had 12 weeks out of the 52 where it was over a million, Pat. Thus far, this past week's Dynamite now puts them at 9 weeks of 1 million or more. So, you know, there's still 3 months left in 2022, but it does. I don't know if they're going to crack 12 weeks or more of a million this week, this year, as we're rounding out the year 2022, though. And again, it was a bad Dynamite. And for anyone who watched last night's live Rampage, again, interesting that people wanted to be in downtown D.C., Pat, on a Friday night after 10 o'clock for two live shows, the Rampage show at 10 o'clock and the Battle of the Belts at 11 o'clock. Interesting about people taking their lives into their hands going to downtown D.C. Not a great show. It really dragged last night. Not sure if you had a chance to watch it or replay. I watched it right before going out last night, before I went out to the city. But I got to tell you, man, Battle of the Belts, back-to-back to Rampage, not a good idea on a Friday, man. I'm not sure. They might have to do something different with Rampage. You can't have two-hour shows on a Friday night. I haven't seen the rating yet, but I cringe at what that rating would be next week.
I mean, dude, it's excessive, man. You know, it's really, really excessive. Obviously, because we're attracted to women, you know, we go out, we do things on the weekend, you know, so we have to DVR these things. You know, fortunately for AEW, a lot of their fans, they don't do that. They don't even talk to women. The only woman that they probably do talk to is their mom. But, you know, luckily for Tony Khan, a lot of these people are home and, you know, they're just eating up all this product. So I guess in that sense, it works for him. But even then, it's just still not enough, man. And it's just, again, it's, you know, for a program that's, you know, on prime time, on a Wednesday, you know, you still got to be better. And you got to bring more fans. And you got to attract casual. And he's
Pat,
just still not doing it.
And Pat, mind you, I'm sorry to cut you off, but mind you, last night was, you know, last night was a playoff game. Last night, now, again, it turned out to be a dud. What else is new with the Mets in October? But it turned out to be kind of a flounder game last night where, okay, you know, the Met game is at 7 o'clock. You know, obviously, we'll see what that did to the SmackDown rating when it comes out next week. But, okay, that game kind of went long into that. You know, a couple of good college football games last night, Rutgers losing last minute. What else is a surprise, for Christ's sake? But, you know, you're thinking, okay, maybe the Rampage and Battle of the Belts could get a decent rating. I don't think so. Again, and, you know, it wasn't a great card per se. I mean, yes. It was weird. The Trios Championship was defended as the main event at the end of Rampage. and the Death Triangle retained. But the very first match on Battle of the Belts was Pac staying to the top of the hour in the ring because he had to defend the Geography Championship against Trent Beretta. Not a good way to start off a show. I mean, I get it. I mean, listen, FTR against the Ring of Honor team, I mean, that was a good match, I thought. But, again, 2 hours on a Friday night, I get it, live. Oh, maybe that spikes the rating a little bit. I don't think it does. Again, the numbers aren't available yet, Pat, but I don't think it did that whatsoever. And I think Kyle's going to have to reassess whether or not you might have to put on Rampage earlier. I get it. You might, you know, you don't want to do that on a Friday, and maybe TNT won't even allow it. Again, the NBA, the NHL returns this week coming up on a Tuesday, and the NBA returns the week after. Friday nights are kind of a fine time schedule, right? I mean, you kind of want those big time games, hockey, the NBA. I think Tony Khan's going to struggle a little bit here if he wants to shuffle his programming around.
Absolutely. He's in a pickle, man. There's no two ways about it, man. He's in a freaking pickle. And homie's just done for. He's just done for. I'm telling you, man. I'm not being all doom and gloom about this for no reason, but it's not good enough. It's not good enough. You know, and I think he did an interview with Helwani this week, right? What was he talking about? He was comparing AEW to like Pepsi. He's like, yeah, people drink Coca-Cola, but you got Pepsi too. Challenger brand. That's what he's calling it. A challenger brand. He says, we're a challenger. You're not a challenger brand. You're just what's around right now. You know what I mean? You're not really a challenger brand. He could be. He could be Pepsi. He could be Pepsi, but he's not. He's fucking, I don't know, he's Shasta Cola or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no.
He's fucking RC
he's
Cola.
He's Mountain Dew.
Yeah.
I can't imagine anybody who doesn't want diabetes wanting to drink Mountain Dew. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right, though. I mean, I think that outlook, again, is myopic by Tony Khan. And real quick, the SmackDown numbers here. Last week, coming up here, numbers not available as of yet, but the last 6 weeks here, I'll give you right now. At the start of the Triple H era, we saw 1.99. on SmackDown, Labor Day weekend, September 2nd, 2.077. The night before the Castle show, the following SmackDown after the Castle, 2.36. In the last few weeks, September 16th, 2.21. September 23rd, 2.5. And September 30th, 2.207. Interesting. No number for last night yet, but it's kind of fluctuated a little bit. A big peak, obviously, 2.535 last week, 2 weeks ago. It's been in the twos for the betterment of this year. I think there was a peak going back to January, again, 2.27 throughout the rest of the year in the twos. Dropped off a little bit in the spring to the 1.9s, but solidly over two and change, really. For the better part of this year. Again, it peaked at 2.535 two weeks ago, Pat, was the best this year. 2.5 is still, again, you know, you got baseball, you know, you got college, you know, not college, you got college football, right? It's a very healthy number for SmackDown. No surprise there on Fox.
Of course, man. I mean, you know, people look at it the same way they look at, you know, college football, basketball. It's a fucking brand. It's almost, you know, an alternative sport / entertainment program, you know. So people know that. It's an established brand, and people are going to tune in regardless. More importantly, the program itself, the content is good, and it makes sense, you know. And it's just, it's only improving every week. I mean, the more these stories progress, the better it becomes. Take the Bloodline, for example. Every week, you know, that story with the Sammy dynamic and with, you know, him and Jay beefing, and then there, him and Roman and Jay were beefing, and then Sammy has to play Peacemaker, and they're just adding so many layers to the storytelling, you know, and I would say that's probably the dominant storyline in all of WWE. You know, that's the one that's generating the most interest. It's produced the best. And obviously it has the biggest star in the company and in the business. So, you know, it's going to be well done, but they're adding so many layers. They're bringing Roman back here and there. You know, I think Roman kind of taking a reduced schedule has really helped them more, not just probably in the physical sense, but his character, you know. The less we see of him, the more important his presence is, you know. And I think it really adds a lot. Obviously, the marks are going to get, you know, their knickers in a twist about, well, you know, we need a world champion on TV that's there every week. You know, we got to have a world champion that's there. You know? Screw that. Roman having these belts, doing what he's doing, it's perfect. It makes sense. And it's great. And just all the content on there is awesome. All these little, you know, mini feuds, all these like undercard feuds, you know, the storytelling with that, the layers they're adding to everything. We're going to get the payoff today for a lot of these. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome. And again, it's just well done. And regardless of what else is on that night, they still generate a good number because it's very well done. And they've established that with their audience. They have that good faith with their audience. AEW has like psychotic ex-girlfriend faith with the marks, but like, you know, as far as it goes with casuals, they don't have that good faith. They kind of like, it goes up and down. You know, the periods where they had potential to kind of be interesting, like the CM Punk and stuff like that, they kind of did it, but they didn't. And they didn't really do it the way it should have been done. And, you know, Punk, to some extent, did not deliver in a lot of those matches. So, you know, it's a lot of stuff that kind of went against Tony Khan there to be able to kind of grow the audience. But, you know, at the end of the day, no matter what, he knows he still has that psycho ex-girlfriend that's going to just show up that, you know, like, you know, collects his hair clippings and stuff like that, you know, extra crazy. And that's the marks that constantly tune in for AEW. So they'll always be there no matter what. But he's up Schitt's Creek. There's no question about it. And SmackDown is just only going to get better and continue to thrive.
Oh, no, absolutely. And to your point about SmackDown, obviously leading into tonight's show, folks, in our main event here this week, obviously we get to break down WWE Extreme Rules, aiming from the Wells Fargo Center later on tonight, October the 8th, from Philadelphia, the home of hardcore, folks, the birthplace of Extreme Championship Wrestling. Good card tonight, Pat. Only six matches, if I'm not mistaken here, which I think are great. I think it's succinct, concise. You know, hey, listen, I've been talking about this for weeks. I love that every single match is a gimmick in a pay-per-view called Extreme Rules. So let's get to it real quick here. After last night's Sheamus and Gunther Intercontinental title match, not as good as their Castle match, and I think it was going to be hard to duplicate that, in all fairness. I think it was unrealistic of us to think that they were going to duplicate how good that match was back in Wales. But hell of a match last night. Gunther getting the win once again on Sheamus. This time, it wasn't a clean win. It still keeps Sheamus strong going into tonight's PLE in the good old-fashioned Donnybrook match, which is what you want. You want a street fight between Imperium and the Brawling Brutes. I think that'll be a good match. Let's kind of run through this card kind of quick here. Imperium and Brawling Brutes, what are you looking out for tonight, bro?
Now, here's something that I'm going to do for probably the first time, you know, what was it that LT said going into WrestleMania? This is the first time, the last time, the only time. That's what he said about, you know, his match with Bam Bam. Too bad he didn't say that about Craig. But, you know, LT, you know, to borrow that phrase, I gotta kind of agree with you. Them having a gimmick for every match does work for this show. And I think the reason why it works is because there's only six matches. If there was anything more than six matches, it would be overkill. And then the crowd would kind of get lost. But with six matches, it's manageable. You do like a little pre-match maybe, you know, and then you're good. So I will agree that a gimmick for every match in this really works well. But it's mainly because of the fact that there are six matches. So, that's the first part of what I wanted to say. The second part with the Brawling Brutes and Imperium, I'm gonna call this like, I'm gonna say it might be match of the night. I know it sounds crazy, but it might be. It's definitely gonna be a sleeper match. That's for sure. Because I think everybody just thinks it's going to be them fighting, you know, gimmicks and stuff like that. But I think those guys are all very creative. They're all hungry. They're all trying to prove something. They've been working this gimmick, this feud for a while. I'd expect something good there. You got to see the Brawl and Brutes getting the win here, especially after Gunther retaining last night.
I don't disagree. I think it'll be, as they say, the Donnybrook, right? Not to excuse the pun, but it should be a good match. I have to disagree with you, though, Pat. I think match of the night potential is our next one. I think the I Quit match between Edge and Finn Balor, I think arguably could steal the show tonight. I think this is going to be violent. It's going to be physical. I think it's almost impossible from a logistics perspective that because it is an I Quit match, it's no disqualification. Anything goes. It would not shock me. And again, it keeps Edge strong where the Judgment Day will get involved. The numbers game will catch up to Edge. I would not be surprised if Finn Balor winning tonight because of that dynamic in the match.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? You definitely might have a point there with this one being the match of the night. This is something that like Edge has talked about working with Finn for so long on his own podcast. And just anytime he's been asked about Finn. So this is kind of like a dream match for Edge. And Edge is, you know, he's the type of worker that when he gets in there, he puts on his thinking cap and he really goes to work and he always puts in a shift and, you know, can really help elevate things with all the little stuff that he does. You know, his facials, his selling, his talking, his mannerisms, you know. So, Finn, I think, is another guy who is really, really talented. He's kind of like, you got to kind of stay almost lost in the shuffle right now because he's not really, you know, yeah, he talks like he's the guy, and they're kind of trying to create that impression that he's the guy. But this could be a win that could kind of cement that if done well, if produced well. And I expect these two to go out there and definitely have a really awesome match. And I mean, the whole card, I think, is going to be stacked with this match. All those layers, all those things, you know, Edge wanting to work with him, Finn having a chance to work with the Hall of Famer, that, you know, the rumors that we've been seeing about the new regime wanting to push Finn more. I think it plays into Finn going over here. And, again, I expect a really cool match out of this.
Absolutely. A strap match between Drew McIntyre and Karrion Kross. I'm happy to see Cross back on television, probably more because of his wife. I think like any other heterosexual male, probably happy to see Scarlett back. Listen, you're not going to put the belt on Drew right now. Certainly had a great match against Roman Reigns at the Castle show. Didn't lose clean. Again, keeps him strong. You got to do something with Drew McIntyre in the meantime. And if you're bringing back Karrion Kross to try to maybe push him as a main event guy, why not have these guys go at it? I think a strap match is a good stipulation. It'll be physical. Again, what strap match isn't physical? It looks hurtful. It looks like it's painful to be in that match, for sure. I kind of see maybe a surprise here. I see Cross going over somehow.
Yeah, you know what? I kind of think that too, man, especially because, you know, you've been kind of working the video packages, all the stuff you've been doing with Cross to kind of get to this. To me, it would be kind of foolish not to put Cross over here. So, obviously, you know, I think he's got to go over in this one. There'll probably be a little chicanery there with his gal. And I fully expect the Regan Cross to go over.
Well, Pat, again, and here's a dynamic that maybe we're not talking about or we're not aware because, again, we've had different variations of it. Is it a traditional strap match where you have to touch all four turnbuckles to win, or is it just a pinfall or submission? That's something we're not aware of. It hasn't really been detailed, so it'll be interesting what they say on the air tonight, I think.
Yeah, that's valid, man. I actually did not think about that at all. And you know what? That'll call you the professor for nothing, huh? But, they'll clarify it tonight probably before the match, like they always do. But you got to kind of think, yeah, it might be one. I mean, I'm inclined to believe that it's probably going to be the touch the four corners thing, you know? That's kind of what I'm inclined to believe, but
I definitely expect some
kind of stuff to happen.
And I think that because of that dynamic, having to touch all four corners, maybe, again, this is where Scarlett gets involved, a distraction, Maybe she stops Drew from touching the fourth turnbuckle in that distraction. Cross yanks on the strap, nails him. There's a variety of different finishes, I think, in this match. So I think that'll be interesting. The fight pit match with UFC Hall of Famer Daniel Cormier as the referee between Seth Rollins and Matt Riddle. Again, you know, we've seen what the fight pit looks like going back to the NXT days. I would argue, I mean, all these matches seem like they're going to be very physical. I would argue probably this is going to be the most physical match of the night between Rollins and Riddle, Pat.
Yeah, man, I expect this shit to be stiff as fuck. And honestly, if I was booking it, man, I would just have Matt go in there and squash him. But that's me. But that does nothing for Seth, and that does nothing for anybody. Plus, it kind of makes wrestling look bad, you know. You don't want to do that. You don't want to create that. So, yeah, I think this match is going to be awesome. There's definitely going to be high spots in this shit. I might even expect DC to get involved in some type of way, like either DC gets knocked out from like a high spot, or something happens where it's like Riddle and DC, you know, down there, and you know, Seth does the Phoenix Splash into the ring, and you know, they catch him, and DC gets knocked out. You got to kind of wonder with Cormier's involvement in this and where it's going to go. I think personally, and this is just me, fantasy booker here, but I would love to see Cormier and Brock Lesnar in WWE. Like, I think it'd be hilarious that WWE would have a match that UFC didn't have. So that would be kind of cool. But if I'm looking at this match, you got to think that Riddle is going over here, unless they're going to do with Riddle what they did with Cody and Seth, you know, where Riddle just takes all the L's and there's no 50-50 here. But you got to think that there's a 50-50, and, you know, this also adds another nice little layer to maybe a potential Survivor Series match.
Absolutely. I think it'll be a good match to watch for sure. The Raw Women's Championship ladder match, Bianca Belair will defend against Bayley. Who knows if the factions will be at ringside. I think that also creates another dynamic that's interesting because it is no disqualification. There are no rules in a ladder match. Interesting to see if someone wins clean, you know, whatever here, based on that dynamic. Bianca Belair, listen, she's certainly won me over. I was never the biggest Bianca Belair fan. I still don't like the gimmick per se, but hell of a girl on the microphone. Her in-ring work has been amazing, continues to get better. You know how I feel about Bayley, dude. Never liked her as a face. Never liked that whole, you know, happy-go-lucky character. Don't like the lunch lady look on her. Don't like the heel persona. It does nothing for me. She's a good heel, which is fine, and she's an amazing worker. But I don't know, man. This match, again, if the payoff is Bayley's been out for some time due to injury and now she returns – and gets her, I would have to assume, based on the fact that she lost to Bianca at Hell in a Cell, that she's going to get her win back against Bianca later tonight in the ladder match. May not be the cleanest of wins, but I think it's going to be a win nonetheless for Bayley, bro.
You know, if lunch ladies looked like that, I don't think we'd have free lunch. I think you'd have to pay for lunch. And I think that that lunch lady or lunch ladies like that might be getting more play than that. But I've never seen a lunch lady that looked like that. I got to say, it's, you know, with Bianca, they've really done a great job with her. The feud with Becky is kind of over. There's a little distance between it now. You know what I mean? And I see personally that this would be a good time to take the belt off of Bianca. You don't hurt her. You could do a rematch at some point. But you got to think that at some, like somewhere down the line, there's going to kind of be a unification bout between the women's titles because you have to get to Becky and Ronda. You know, I don't know are they doing a draft or what? What's the situation with that? I don't think they have the brand anymore, right?
They did announce, I did read this a few weeks back on Wrestling Inc., that I believe a draft is potentially going to be happening later on next month. I could be wrong. They originally had said October, but we're already in October. That hasn't happened yet. So I don't know. If you remember last time, it was right before Survivor Series. Might still happen. I don't know. Again, I get what you're saying about the brands per se, But nothing official as of yet. I'm sure that'll be big news at some point when it's announced.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I just think like what the draft situation is, or like where it's, when it's going to be, kind of might have a little bit of impact on the booking of this match. But I mean, Bianca's had a really good run. I don't think her losing dirty in a ladder match harms her in any type of way. Bayley's a pro. She knows what to do. She's been there before. She's got a new faction. I would say run with that. And eventually, some point down the line, you got to have Becky maybe come back and take it off of Bayley. And I think that would be really good stuff. I think their history and all that stuff has another layer to it. So it would just be good all-around storytelling. But even if Bianca goes over, she's still really strong as a champion. I mean, you know, Bianca is a textbook example of, like, not liking a gimmick but appreciating a worker, maybe for some people. For me personally,
absolutely.
I like it. I get it. I think it's all fantastic, but she's a really special talent. You know, the way she's been able to adapt to wrestling as if she's been doing this for like 10 years in such a short frame of time, it's really, really impressive. And she's definitely a testament to, you know, somebody putting their head down, going to work, and, you know, just improving every day and just really the developmental system in WWE. So this should be a pretty cool match.
Listen, if anything, this is another shining example of how great the developmental system is at the Performance Center in Orlando. I mean, you're taking athletes and getting them to work a certain style. I mean, I think that's a testament to the trainers, right? I remember all their names.
But Attitude, Fern. Attitude as well, Fern. You know what I'm saying? Because
how many great
athletes have we seen go through there? And, you know, wrestlers that are in other companies now that people are like, man, this guy's going to be a surefire Hall of Famer, you know, or this guy's going to be a main eventer in no time. And then they go in there and they flop. You know, a lot of it also has to do with the attitude. And I think that she has a good attitude as well as her husband.
Oh, absolutely. And it's a shame to see her husband on the shelf right now with a walking boot. Hopefully we wish him a speedy recovery. And we'll see when they're back in the tag title picture for sure, which at some point, you know, Montez Ford is going to be that single star, I think, that we expect out of that team for sure. You know,
he's
going to
turn on him.
I'm sure at some point it happens to a lot of good tag teams. Somebody turns on the other, from Shawn Michaels turning on Marty Jannetty to Scott turning on Rick Steiner. It's happened throughout, so it wouldn't be the first, won't be the last, but it'll be interesting when that does happen for sure. Main event tonight, the SmackDown Women's Championship on the line in an Extreme Rules match. Liv Morgan, Jersey Zone, out of Elmwood Park, New Jersey, challenging Ronda Rousey. Interesting, though, Pat, you know, last night's go-home show on SmackDown, I get it. The main event was Gunther against Sheamus for the Intercontinental title. You saw the opening segment with Logan Paul and the Bloodline. You saw Ricochet against Solo Sikoa. Kind of interesting. Not to say there isn't buildup, but interesting not to see anything going into the show tonight, coming out of last night's SmackDown in Worcester, Massachusetts. Interesting, but I think they've also had a lot of backstory with Liv Morgan and Ronda.
Yeah, of course. I mean, look, you don't want to beat it people over the head with it to death. Maybe they're also waiting for that pop. You know, that could probably be an opener. You never know. You know, save Liv's pop for that opener. But, you know, I think it's good. I mean, you've done enough storytelling with certain things. You know, you want to focus on some of the other stuff. I thought the pace of the show was great last night. I thought they covered all their bases. I feel like they finished what Raw kind of started as far as, you know, the PLE goes. And, you know, I think it was a smart move. You know, I mean, again, it's you got to give Triple H a lot of credit, man. The awareness, he even came out, too, at the beginning of the show. You know, huge ovation. You know, I'm sure he's going to get a huge ovation on Monday for DX and BK, home of the Nets.
Uh-huh.
My Nets. By the way, October 1st pass. Have you chosen a team? You fucking roaming gnome of fucking basketball?
I have not yet made a decision. I'm still in the works right now, looking at rosters, looking at analytics here, what team will have my fandom for the 2022-2023 NBA season. You know, my hockey team, I'm excited hockey's coming back. I'm a big-time Devil fan. You know, that fandom is never going to leave me. But I have not yet made a decision. I'm still collaborating with my team of analysts. my attorney. I'm still collaborating. I will make a decision soon on Instagram Live, so folks, stay tuned for that.
Are you going to announce your decision at Waterside? Like, are you gonna like, you know, sit at Waterside and announce your decision? You know, they're going to film.
I might do it at a table and have a cap there, kind of like the kids do right before decision day in college. And they'll put on a cap. They'll be like, I'm taking my town to Rutgers University. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. I've been seeing some photos come up on my newsfeed and my memories about me wearing Brooklyn Nets gear. I don't know. It's kind of – I don't know, man. I'm liking the way this net roster is looking. I don't know. I will be making a decision soon. And, of course, Pat will be rocking the Kip Sabian gimmick at Barclays because he definitely doesn't want to be seen with me openly if I'm wearing a Nets gear. But, Pat, to your point.
I'll wear a do-rag. That's what I'll do. I'll just wear a do-rag, and I'll walk around with you wearing a fucking do-rag. And just have that visual going around, you know?
Oh, God.
So what's the rest of the card? We still got more stuff,
don't
we?
That's it. That's our card. That's our card, man. Six matches for tonight at Extreme Rules. Again, premium live event tonight on Peacock. And again, it'll be great that we'll, you know, watching it live. Obviously, if you can't watch it live, you'll have to watch the replay with 37 ads probably later on. We'll see. But a good show again in Philadelphia. I think tickets are almost sold out, if not sold out already, at the Wells Fargo. A big pro wrestling town though, Pat. So not a surprise about what's coming up later on tonight. Folks, as we're about to wrap up here on this day in wrestling history, it is October the 8th, and some interesting notes here. On this day in 2001, on an episode of Monday Night Raw in Indianapolis, Stone Cold Steve Austin won his sixth and final WWE Championship by defeating Kurt Angle a mere weeks after losing the belt to Angle in his hometown of Pittsburgh at WWE Unforgiven. By the way, I think a name I'd love to have come back as a PLE. Also on the episode, Booker T and Test lost the WCW tag team titles to the Hardy Boys. Also in 2006 on this day, WWE presented No Mercy at the RBC Center in Raleigh, North Carolina. By the way, really nice building, Pat. I've been there for a few shows. I've been there for a couple of NC State Wolfpack basketball games. Really, really nice venue. In the main event, King Booker retained his World Heavyweight Championship in a fatal four-way against Finlay, Bobby Lashley, and Batista. Also on the show, Montavious Porter, otherwise known as MVP, made his WWE debut with a win over enhancement talent Marty Garner. In 2007 on this day, Hiroshi Tanahashi defeated Yuji Nagata to win the IWGP Championship, Heavyweight Championship. And also on this day in 2017, WWE's Hell in a Cell took place at the Little Caesars Arena. Actually, that building opened that fall in Detroit, Michigan. The main event saw Kevin Owens defeat Shane McMahon with a surprise assist from his rival, Sami Zayn. The highlight of the night was, for the first time ever, the New Day defending the tag titles in a Hell in a Cell match against the Usos. The Usos won that match. And also that evening, other title changes included Baron Corbin winning the United States Championship in a triple threat match against AJ Styles and Ty Dillinger. And all that on this day in pro wrestling history.
Oh, you also forgot, too. Also on this day, I see clearly everything has come to life, a bitter place and a broken dream, and we'll leave it all behind. On this day, it's so real to me, everything has come to life, another chance to chase a dream, another chance to feel alive. Alive, you know? So I also wanted to add that as well on this day.
That was really good. That was really good. Pat, we're about to wrap up here. Final thoughts here as we're about to close up shop here tonight.
Really excited for the show. I'm not going to lie, man. I think it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to hanging out with my kids and watching it. They're pretty pumped up for it as well. I got to be honest, man. I dig these Saturday PLEs. I'm a big fan.
Same here.
The Sunday thing's cool, you know, it's traditional, but, you know, obviously with football back again, you know, people are going to want to watch, you know, their team. And, you know, I just think it's a smart move by WWE I think especially on a holiday weekend, you know, you got kids that are home that are going to want to watch this stuff, families that are going to want to watch this stuff, casuals, people, you know, people are used to watching something on a Saturday night, whether it's a fight, you know, a big game, you know, and now, you know, obviously wrestling. So it's going to be pretty darn good. I'm looking forward to it. I've got some gigs coming up soon, but I'll be announcing that on the show. Right now we tentatively have a date on October 29th at Jimmy's out in Kearney. But once I round out the rest of the lineup that night, I'll be sure to announce it on the show. And, yeah, just really looking forward to checking this out. And I'm also going to be watching GCW as well. I got to think that Gage is going to win there. I really, really do. I got to think that Gage is going to win. And I also think that Gage is going to win not just because, you know, Gage got it shaped, you know, and, like, really, I mean, he looks fantastic. He looks probably the best he's ever looked. And, you know, to go from where he was at before that, where he just looked like he was, you know, about to croak, unfortunately, at the Hammerstein show, he just looks great now. He looks focused. And also with the news of Moxley signing that extension and, you know, getting more of an increased mentorship role, you got to think that Moxley is going to lose that one and Nick Gage is going to continue to wrestle. But that should be a fun show as well. So, yeah, just looking forward to enjoying the weekend, and I hope everybody else does as well. Be safe out there, people, and look forward to coming back again soon.
All right, absolutely. Folks, a couple of things here to look out for coming up next Saturday, October the 15th. Wrestling Inc. will present Inktacular, a great meet and greet at the Kenilworth Hotel in Central Jersey, folks, right off of exit 138 on the Garner State Parkway. At the Woodland Ballroom in the lower level, which is located at 60 South 31st Street in Kenilworth, New Jersey, folks, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Inktacular, great meet and greet featuring WWE Hall of Famer, two-time Hall of Famer, Bret the Hitman Hart, along with Rikishi, Harvey Whippleman, Gilbert, former WWE Women's Champion, Molly Holly, former member of the Head Shrinker, Samu, Doink, and Dink will be making an appearance. The reason I'm going, PCO, I want to take a picture with that maniac, PCO, as well as WWE Hardcore Queen Francine, along with the Blue Meanie. Eddie Edwards, along with his wife Alicia, will also be headlining this great meet and greet, folks, next Saturday, October the 15th, from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m. So that's for all of you wrestling fans. I know I'm going to go because I want to definitely meet PCO. And I'd like to meet Rikishi. Never had a chance to meet Rikishi. And for those of the group in the Attitude Era, I mean, Jesus Christ, how do you not love what Rikishi meant to professional wrestling, and certainly what his offspring are doing some years later, right? They're arguably the best tag team in the world. So,
arguably,
know, great
arguably,
well,
arguably,
well, you know, some people might, you know,
arguably,
opinions, you know, well, I'm not saying arguably, some people might say arguably. Well, I'm not saying arguably. Some
no,
might say arguably.
There is no other opinion. There is no other opinion. They're generating ratings. They're generating interest. They're talented. They have character. Character. Say it with me, Professor. Character.
Character.
That's what they have.
Hey, listen.
And there might be another. I'm just saying, there ain't no poor man's Brainbusters. All right? That's all I'm saying.
I get that. Well, and speaking of the poor man's Brainbusters, folks, the following Saturday on October the 22nd, the Big Time Wrestling promotion will be having the Big Time Wrestling Heart Attack Tour coming to Brooklyn as the Hitman, Bret Hart, will be in the corner of FTR, the reigning and defending Ring of Honor, New Japan IWGP champion and AAA tag team champion, as they'll be fighting Jay Lethal along with Homicide. Good match there at the Sunset Park rooftop, the Whale Building in downtown Brooklyn, 114B 53rd Street, Saturday, October 22nd, from 6:30 p.m. until 11:30 p.m. There will be a meet and greet beforehand. I'm sure a lot of people want to go meet Bret Hart. I'm going to meet FTR because I'm a big time fan of 7-time FTR, the living legend, the top guys. So I'm sure many people will want to definitely go for that one as well, Patrick.
Yeah, no, that's great. They got all those accomplishments and all that shit you just said, right? But they ain't the ones. Everybody knows
that's
who the
right
ones
now.
Are.
So that's
all really is too. And by the way, I'd also like to point out how insensitive the event of this, the name of this event is. The Heart Attack Tour, okay? What about people with cardiovascular conditions? How do you think they're going to feel about this? This is awful. You know, I hope that somebody protests this event and they cancel it, okay? Maybe Brett's better off. He's safer in Canada, okay? Shouldn't be coming over here to the mean streets of New York City.
Hey, listen, I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you. I think the show definitely people want to go watch. You know, Jay Lethal, obviously still a great wrestler, still a great worker. We'll see. And again, folks, you know, those shows are interesting for those of you who want to go to meet and greets, some good meet and greets in the month of October. And certainly, folks, make sure you check out Real Talk on Monday nights via Jersey First TV on LinkedIn and also on the Jersey First TV Facebook. It'll be available on my secondary page since my main page is being shadow banned. I can't broadcast live for it for another 13 days after my 30-day span, you know. So, yeah, man, you got to have those backup pages, you know. That's how you keep getting traffic there. So Mark Zuckerberg trying to outsmart me, but I'm outsmarting him as I'm still getting traffic on backup pages. So this Monday night, folks, I'll have Jorge Cabrera, the president of the Rutgers Business School Alumni Association. For those of you that aren't aware, the Rutgers Business School continues to be one of the top-notch business schools, not just in the Northeast, but it's nationally ranked, continues to be nationally ranked in the Forbes top 20 business school, as well as other graduate programs that Rutgers University offers. So he'll be joining me live this Monday on Columbus Day at 6 p.m. to talk about academics, talk about the importance of business training, and certainly the rise of Hispanics pursuing graduate degrees at a higher rate than other demographics in the U.S. Folks, you definitely want to check out that show this Monday at 6 p.m. PBR, before we call it a night here, one final thought, brother.
Enjoy the gimmicks, whatever it is you like, even if you like AEW. Don't fucking hurt nobody. Don't be an asshole. That's all I got to say about that.
All right. Well said there by the PBR superstar. Folks, always check out our show. Once again, blogtalkradio.com/workinthemarks. Shout out to D. Rotten, our amazing administrator, who gets our stuff out there and working on a new theme song for the show. So you definitely want to tune in for that in the coming weeks. Write to us, ladies and gentlemen, workinthemarks@gmail.com. Once again, workinthemarks@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram @working_the_marks. And, of course, check out our own Instagrams, the great PBR superstar @PaddyRican, PaddyRican. And also, of course, my own Instagram @TheFernandoZone. But check out Real Talk with Fernando Uribe, because that Instagram doesn't seem to get shadow banned. My views on the stories are infinitely bigger than my main page figure with Instagram. But I'm just telling you, the numbers tell me. If I'm getting 500 views for a story as opposed to 10,
okay.
I mean, there's something
that's amazing.
Wrong, you know?
That's amazing. So then do a fucking show called The Shadow Ban Hour. You know, talk about it there. But people just want to listen about wrestling. That's all. You know,
I'm just telling
the Shadow
you,
Ban I'm Hour gonna... with Professor Fernando Uribe. You know, there you go.
Hey, D. Rotten.
New fucking gimmick.
Hey, D. Rotten, get to work on a new theme, bro. Get to work on a new theme for that show. Okay, good call by Pat there. Also, folks on Twitter, check us out @working_marks. Check out Patrick, of course, on Twitter @PatrickSKVM. Of course, my own Twitter @TheFernandoZone as well. Folks, if we're talking about it, you're listening to it. And always here every week on Blog Talk Radio, New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, Patrick Rivera, the PBR superstar, and me being New Jersey's premier award-winning journalist, Fernando Uribe, we're always working the marks here on Blog Talk Radio. Folks, have a great weekend. Enjoy the long weekend, since it is Columbus Day weekend. Enjoy Extreme Rules. Enjoy the GCW show. Enjoy a great weekend of NFL action and the baseball playoffs. And we'll see you next week here, folks. Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.
Go Yankees.
You're listening to Working the Marks with New Jersey's premier journalist, with Professor Fernando Uribe, and New Jersey's premier wrestling analyst, the PBR superstar Patrick Rivera.